And welcome back to Coast, as we will take your phone calls next on mediums and what could very well be on the other side, next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast with our special guest, Julie Bashel, and her works, of course, from the mouths of mediums, among mediums as well. You've got an ebook out too, don't you, Julie?
All three of my books are ebooks.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Do you believe in these EVP sounds, electronic voice phenomena?
Well, earlier I talked about like the problem with human perception, and the brain's first thing it learned to recognize visually was a face, and the first thing it learned to recognize audibly was a voice. So anytime someone says, oh, I see, you know, this has a face in it, it doesn't mean there's a face in it. It means a human brain saw a face. And so the same thing goes with audio, where if you hear a voice, of course you did because it's a human brain. And the same thing with consensus. Oh, but we all heard it. Yeah, because you all speak English. And so my husband, my forte in research is mediumship. Mark does field investigations of hauntings, EVP and ITC, instrumental transcommunication. And physical mediumship. So I would let him talk about that, but it's really difficult to collect EVP under controlled conditions. Mark has a system where he gets a recorder and everybody in the room has a notepad and a stopwatch. And if someone drops, you know, they ask, you know, if anyone's there, come in and talk to us on this recording. And then, like, if someone drops their pencil, everybody writes down, oh, at this time, you know, a pencil dropped, or at this time a truck drove by. And if you listen to the recording and just you show it, you give it to someone, you say, you know, oh, there's these anomalous sounds. People go, yeah, that sounds like a voice, because you've primed them to, you say EVP, they're primed to hear a voice. But if you look at the coding, it's just the truck driving by or the pencil dropping.
Right, exactly.
So it's really difficult to collect EVP. In a way to eliminate all the other things that it could be.
Well, and they're so darn hard to play. I know we play some on the radio, and it's even tougher because you go from it's hard to hear, and then it's even harder on the radio. And sometimes, you know, you'll hear the investigators so excited, and then you'll hear something that goes, I know, and you have no idea what it is.
Yeah. We did a study where we were using a software program called EVP Maker.
Really?
Where it takes all the sounds in English human speech and it randomizes them. This is a simplistic way to describe this. And it sort of says it in like a robot voice, like it goes, and operators will say, oh, I can hear real-time messages in that. And so we trained voice recognition software, like transcription software, voice recognition software, to recognize that robot voice. And then we looked to see if people, if the software could recognize what the operator was saying was in there, and we got negative results. We could not find any correlation there. And then we did a listening panel portion where we took sections from the sessions where the operator said, oh, I got communication in here. And then we just ran the thing randomly and where no one was involved. No one actually ever heard the samples as they were being collected. And then we gave them to these listening panels, and so there were like 10 that were from an active session, 10 that were from a control session where nobody was asking for communication or anything. And we're all randomized. They didn't know which was which. And like 99% of people heard something in every they heard language in every all 20 sessions, even though some of them were just garbage and control. And I think what's interesting is like what people hear is never buy milk. It's always get out. People are primed to think that the messages that are going to come through are mean. And so, you know, again, perception, like you get a human brain involved and all bets are off. Like, you know, Mark worked at the Exploratorium Museum in San Francisco. He had a colleague, and on his door, he had a sign that said, seeing is the mind's best guess. Like, it, there's so much that the brain does to fill in the blanks and things. And, like, when you see things or hear things, it's just your brain has limited energy and limited time and resources. And so it fills in a lot of blanks. So what we perceive as reality is really not. It's not a direct reflection of the physical world or, you know, these sensory impressions are not direct representation. The same way that a camera is not a direct representation of, like, when you take a picture, that is not, you know, that's the camera's best guess at the light that was coming in and such.
Not a bad guess, though. Let's go to the calls here for you. International line, Terry in Toronto. Welcome to the program. Hi, Terry.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I got a question. As you can probably appreciate, we're reeling a bit from today's events.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So
in terms of the other side, I'm wondering what awaits a guy like this on the other side.
The shooter?
Yeah.
You heard that story, Julie, about the shooting in Ottawa?
I did not.
Okay, yeah. There was a sicko went crazy, shot the soldier, killed him, and he himself got killed.
Oh, my gosh.
But the question is, when someone like that dies and goes to the other side, what happens to that person?
My expertise is, like, in this very narrow, like, I study mediums and under these very controlled conditions, and we don't necessarily, you know, we don't ask about esoteric questions like that about what happens. I would recommend... there's a book called Handbook to the Afterlife. If people are interested in this topic, there's a book called Handbook to the Afterlife by Pamela Ray Heath and John Climo that sort of organizes the cultural, traditional ideas about the steps, you know, what happens when we die, what happens, and the, you know, the what might happen to someone like that and the what they have to face. And the steps that they have to take. And then there another colleague of mine named Stafford Betty has written two books about, I think the one is called The Afterlife Revealed and the other one's called Heaven and Hell Revealed. And it's about, it's from channeled information and information from mediums about what they say the afterlife is like. And in situations like that, like, it's not all, you know, bubble gum and roses. That sometimes, yeah, if you've done things like that, then there it may be a different reality for you once you die.
What do you think of reincarnation, Julie?
I'm very familiar with the Jim Tucker's work. He's on our scientific advisory board, and he's done a lot of his research is with children who remember past lives, and some of his cases are just fascinating. Children who are born with birth defects or what look like scars that directly mimic the, you know, the bullet wound or the stabbing wound of the personality that they remember of how that died, like that there's some bit of consciousness that, you know, builds the body and it's stuck in that place. So, like, it knows that happened to its body. And so when it builds the new body, then it incorporates that scarring. Or even like people who lost, you know, when the adult lost fingers in an accident, and then when the baby is born, they don't have fingers on that hand. Like, it just really represents, you know, there's consciousness and reality is just so, there's so much that we don't understand. So I just think that line of research is fascinating.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Gene in the state of Washington now. Gene, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to try to make this understandable as best I can. I want to know, is there a way to hear from someone before they pass away? My experience was in 1980, I received a phone call from my sister. My husband answered the phone, said it's your sister, handed me the phone. She was in like an echoless environment. She kept saying she didn't know where she was. I said, where's Billy, which was her baby. She said, I think he's in bed. She just kept saying, I got to go. I said, where are you going? She said, I don't know. The phone faded away to nothing. I immediately called her back. You could hear they were having dinner. You could hear the baby in the background. I said, you just called me. You were lost. And she said, no, I wasn't. She said, I'm right here. I'm having dinner with Bill and her kids. My sister has passed away in 2007.
Jeez.
And so I've never heard before of anyone receiving a phone call before the person. Like, is there a warp in time or something that...
Most of the time it's afterwards.
Right.
All the time it's afterwards.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. There are cases of people who know that someone has died before, you know, before the phone call comes and things like that. And, you know, phone calls from the dead, right? That's a phenomenon. I would just say that, you know, what we know about consciousness and based on, you know, all the parapsychological research, all the survival of conscious research, is that consciousness is not bound by space or time. And that it can have effects forward and backward in time, and it can have access to information forward and backward in time. So I think that's how I would explain that there was some emotionally charged, you know, maybe when she died, that was an emotionally charged situation. And I don't know why. You were saying it's 1980 to 2007, is that what you said?
Correct. She passed away in 2007. And when I got the call that she was initially diagnosed with soft tissue sarcoma, in my head, I could just hear like a bell tolling, like it just never stops. It just, that's the best way I could describe it. But that phone call in 1980, I know it was her. And like I said, she was in an echoless chamber and she didn't know where she was, but she had to go.
Wow. Yeah, that's really a unique story. I've never heard anything like that.
Mm.
Well, you know what? Another case for the mediums.
Right.
What kind of acceptance did you get from peers, from other scientists, if anything?
Colleagues of mine who, you know, have literally gotten fired from their university jobs for even sort of contemplating topics like this.
No way.
Yeah. And, they're like martyrs. And then I like think, what about me? I never even had the opportunity to, you know, have a pension or retirement plan because I went right out of grad school into this field. That's the way the universe was pushing me. And I think actually I fly under the radar of a lot of the skeptics and things because I'm young and I'm female, so they don't think that I'm a threat, but my data continues to mount and they will be surprised, you know, that the information that we're collecting, that the data is just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. I published a study in 2007. It had a end of 16 readings we analyzed. And I have a paper coming out next year that was a replication and extension of that study where we did 58 readings. And the results are just as strong and just as significant under those same quintuple blind conditions. So, I don't care my job is to collect and report the data. And it doesn't matter to me what other people say about it. And that's what the beauty of having our own research organizations. We don't answer to anyone. We don't have a dean to like frown at us. Like we can do whatever research that we want to do, that the research that's the most important that day, the studies that need to get done. The problem is that with that, there's no funding that comes with that. Most science in this country is funded by the government, and there is no funding for research like this, which is, I think, the reason why we're, as far as I know, the only lab in the U.S. that's doing empirical, controlled, proof-focused mediumship research. Because it's a sentence to the poorhouse right now, and we're actually crowdfunding because there's private grants from some organizations, but unfortunately they pale in comparison to like NIH and NSF funding.
Oh, absolutely.
We're actually crowdfunding a big study that we're trying to
do. You're on GoFundMe, right?
GoFundMe, yeah. People can visit afterlifescience.com if they're interested in supporting that. It's a clinical trial. You know, my PhD's in pharmacology. I know how to design a drug trial, and it's a clinical trial looking at using a standardized grief instrument, a questionnaire asking people about their grief, people who got a reading and people who didn't get a reading, and comparing that, because there's a lot of anecdotal information about people who feel better after they get a reading, but we really don't know. And until we look at that, the system is not going to take us seriously until we have that data. And then, you know, once we have that data, we can determine if a mediumship reading is truly helpful, harmful, or neither for the grieving. And if it is helpful, who might it be best for? And at what time after the death is the best time? And, you know, are there cases that are contraindicated that people should not get a mediumship reading? And that study is the first step in that. And, you know, I like to say it's the first step in me getting your insurance company to pay for a mediumship reading. Because if we can provide clinical data that's helpful, there's plenty of clinical data that shows traditional psychotherapy is not necessarily helpful for grief. And so we can demonstrate this, you know, it's like taking one pill and feeling better. One mediumship reading can really change people. And we need to get this study done so that we can, you know, begin to affect change in the system and in the culture and in healthcare.
Next up, let's go to Ronnie in Mississippi. Squeeze you in before the break. Ronnie, go ahead.
Hey, George. I'm glad to be online. First time caller.
Thank you, sir.
Been listening to Art for the last 40 years. Well, I've been truck driving for 40 years.
Not that long, but close, right?
I've been truck driving for 40 years, and I've been listening to Art for a very long time, and now I'm listening to you.
Super.
I'm glad to be on the show. What happened was, 22 years ago, my brother passed away. I was out of town, about to go to bed. I couldn't go to sleep. I've been on one of my trips. I ended up going back to the house, and we stayed next door to each other. I got home. I went to the bathroom. I come out, and I missed my brother. For some reason why, I could not go to sleep that night, and I drove all the way back to New Orleans. About an hour later after he passed, I got a call from the hospital that he was in the emergency room. He had a brain aneurysm.
Oh, geez.
He never did recover or regain consciousness from this. I spent 2 weeks in the hospital. Particular day, I decided to go home and take a shower and come back to the hospital. When I went home to go to sleep, I was there about half an hour, 45 minutes, which I thought I slept 8 or 9 hours. I had a vision of him. He came to me and told me that he had to leave, but everything was going to be all right. And it was so strange because there was nothing behind him. It was like he was just standing in a gray, a kind of a beige room.
How long did he stay with you, Ronnie?
When he came to me, when I thought I was asleep.
Yeah.
It must have happened. It seemed like 10 or 15 minutes.
Wow, well, that's long. Got to take the break. We'll be right back. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, first hour, the medium James Von Prague joins us with his latest work, and then followed by a special program in tribute to some Coast to Coast guests who have passed away. We did one of these a year ago, and we'll be doing this again. I'll be doing all the introductions. There's some special interviews with these people just to kind of remember them. So it's our special Coast to Coast Dead Persons program, and I hope you're part of it. We'll be back in a moment with final calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to go through with our final questions with Dr. Julie Bischel, of course, and her website, winbridge.org. How did you come up with the name, Julie?
I wanted to have a name that had something very solid and physical and then something very ethereal and not physical. And spirit, wind is very powerful, but you can't see it. And the metaphor of the bridge between the medium serves as a bridge between this life and the next. To be totally honest, that was the URL that was available. Of all the names that we came up with, that was the one that was still free. I just realized I never finished. We went to the break, and I didn't finish my story about the medium. We did a reading, and then she said, "Can we talk after the research reading?" And I called her back, and she said, "I don't understand this. Are you thinking about changing your name? That seems weird to me. Your mom is here. She's just showing me over and over again, Dr. Julie Beischel. Like, it's just one thing. It's just one thing." And she's saying, "You can't cut it. You can't change it." And she said, "Is that, you know, are you thinking about changing your name?" And I said, "Well, actually, yeah. I'm thinking about getting married, and we're thinking about changing our name." And she said, "Yeah, your mom does not want you to do that." So I think that was the only sort of break in my research that the mediums provided information to me. The other piece I want to talk about, the caller that we just had, Ronnie, was talking about that experience he had of his brother when he died. He had a visitation, and I just wanted to say that that's a really common experience. The survey data show that nearly a third of American adults have had contact with the deceased, and they don't seem to follow any, like, it's not any specific kind of person. They occur across all socioeconomic and religious groups, all types of death, and all at various times after the death. It seems to be a natural part of the grieving process. So that those are really common experiences, and people should not be frightened of them or think that they're weird or odd. Like, they're very, very common.
Julie, do you find that when the spirit, let's say, gets reincarnated, that the medium can no longer get in touch with the spirit because it's in another human life form?
We haven't done that study specifically. I asked a philosopher friend of mine, like, that we get that question a lot, how can there be reincarnation and mediumship? And the philosopher said, you know, in American views, everything's very black and white, but other cultures, it's not so clear cut. So there's so much about consciousness that we don't yet understand that, you know, who knows, it might be that, like, a portion gets reincarnated and then a portion can still talk to the medium, but we haven't actually looked at that, like trying to contact the deceased personality that is now that the new child remembers. Like, we haven't looked at that specifically.
Let's go to John in Ontario, Canada, first time caller. John, thanks for calling. You're up with us.
Oh, George, this is fantastic.
Right, I've
listened to your show since I had my Cadillac 1962 on and hit the button on the floor. Don't like the stations, hit yours, listen to it ever since.
1961? You were time traveling. Go ahead, John.
No, I was alive. I've had so many things happen to me since I was 5 years old. I thought, proof, my mother's been with me many, many times. One thing I want to say about you first. When you hit the show, You just knew it all right away. You have so much knowledge in that. Of course, you get on the radio, your head goes blank. The second thing I forget, but the last. You truly, truly have a heart.
Thank you.
Kind heart, a loving heart of the average person. But your family, your grandchildren, George. Okay, I'll go on with one thing that happened to me.
What happened?
I walk in a bar. I just wanted to have two glasses of draft and go home. So this guy sees me. My cousin's 6'7".
Wow.
He's big. And he treated me. I loved him. Haven't seen him since I was a child. But this guy, he was huge. He was 6'4". Muscles like you wouldn't believe. He was an older gentleman. And he kept calling me. Where the hell have you been, George? Where you been? That's the name. He called me.
Called you George?
Yeah. My name's John. And he kept going on. And I said, I'm not him. I'm not this guy you're talking about. He wouldn't believe it. He says, you've done something wrong. You hiding? What's going on? So finally, I said, I'm going to sit down with you for a minute. I bought him a glass of draft, one for me.
Yeah.
Right away, I start getting pictures. I've been having it since I was 5 years old.
Like visions?
Visions. things about celebrities that are going to die. Within 2 days, they die.
Jeez.
I knew the day before Elvis Presley was going to die. I told my wife. She always says I'm crazy.
Don't get any thoughts about me, John.
No, I don't have any that
all right,
way.
Good.
So, okay. So I go on talking with this man. All of a sudden, I'm getting pictures. I'm seeing everything about this man. I said, you got a different kind of job. You work with bad people.
Bad people?
Yeah. And I says, you work in a jail in a local town called Owen Sound, Ontario.
Wow, and you're telling him all that stuff.
Yeah. I says, you're a guard. Right away, he's looking at me.
Now he's convinced he knew you, I bet.
No. Now he knew he didn't know me.
Huh.
So then I'm seeing more pictures. I says, you have two children. One's a girl, brown hair, glasses, very smart, very, very good girl. I says, you have a son. I described exactly what he looked like. I described his coat that he always wears, his special jacket with the crest on the back. I described his running shoes, the way he dressed exactly. He's looking at you. I'm freaking him out. And I says, your son's in trouble right now. He's in trouble with the law.
God, you were right about all that stuff.
Everything.
And you still do that now, though, John?
Yeah, I've had it since I was 5 years old. Just about every show you have, I've had experiences with. I can tell you one, I guarantee you for sure, there is a third dimension. I watched it happen right in front of me.
I believe it, listening to you. So, Julie, how would you react with someone like John, who's not been through a study, but who seems like he's very psychic?
Yeah, I think it's very common. I think a lot of people have those experiences. For some reason, though they are very common, I think that in our culture we have somehow hidden that, and that people think that it's very odd. And I think that's really problematic, because children who have these experiences, parents that don't understand, will, you know, go one of two extremes, like, oh, my kid is so amazing, they should be on TV, or, you know, but it's really actually a very common experience, or like, that's evil and you shouldn't talk about that. And so I think that's one of the purposes of our research, is just demonstrating the normalcy of these experiences, and that communication with the other side is very common and very possible, and that it doesn't, it's just a function of consciousness that it can survive physical death. It doesn't necessitate any grander spiritual meaning. It's just something consciousness can do. It can live in or out of the body.
Next up, Kenny's with us in Wisconsin, so let's go east. Hi, Kenny.
Good morning, George. How you doing, my friend?
All is well. Thank you.
Excellent. In 1984, me and my mother were hit by a drunk driver, and she was killed 2 days before my 15th birthday.
Oh, my gosh.
And I moved to Wisconsin with my father because my parents were divorced. And about a month after moving to Wisconsin, I was very lonely. I missed my mother terribly. And I had a dream when I went to bed one night that I woke up all of a sudden, and we were going down the road in what I thought was like her parents' Winnebago. And why, I have no idea. That was never part of the dream. But I remember looking at her and seeing that she was alive, and I kept slapping my face and pinching my skin to make sure I was awake. And I kept saying, Mom, are you okay? Are you okay? What happened? You know, are you hurt? And she kept telling me, Kenny, I'm fine. I'm fine. It's okay, Kenny. It's okay. And I was so sure that I was awake that I kept pinching myself. And when I finally did wake up, I felt cheated, because as a young child, I all I wanted more in life was for my mother to be there, and was just a dream. It was crazy.
And let me ask you this, Julie, with what Kenny went through. Is there something in the body that creates this to buffer pain? Or is it the spirit from the other side doing it because it realizes he was in pain?
I think most of us, you know, we don't enter into any sort of altered state in our normal days. And dreams is the one that we regularly do. So in volume one of From the Mouths of Mediums, that was one of the big suggestions that the mediums on our team had for people who wanted to experience, is set the intention, ask your loved one to visit you in a dream. It seems easier for them to access communication with you. Recommended, keep a pad of paper and a pen next to your bed so that you remember, so when you wake up in the night, you can write it down. And, you know, one even said, put a picture of your loved one under your pillow or on your nightstand to sort of bring that, you know, permission in, like, I really want to talk to you in my dreams. It's in parapsychology, we call it psi-conducive. It's a state that is conducive to allowing this non-local information to come through, and it's easy. You know, we all do that every night, enter the dream state. It's a wonderful place to communicate with the deceased or even acquire telepathic or precognitive information.
Okay, we go now to Caesar in New Jersey. Caesar, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
First of all, I want to say I'm a big fan of the show. I just turned 30 years old. The last past about a year and a half, I've been listening to the show. It's very informative.
Well, thank you.
I love the show, by the way. I have a question. My daughter was born on July 2nd, 2014. That was the same day that my grandfather died. I feel like sometimes maybe that being that day, that I feel like maybe sometimes that it was meant to be, because maybe my grandfather is somehow watching over my daughter, but it's just always, it's very mind-boggling to me. I always think about it because I wasn't that close to my grandfather. You know what I mean? He lived in Peru. I was born in the United States. I was raised in America. So, like, you know, I only have pictures and when I was younger. So I feel like sometimes, like, that's my, like, direct connection to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much, does that anything to do? Does that feel like maybe there's a spiritual connection? Like, is he watching over my daughter because of that day, you know, that specific day she was born and that day he died?
Go ahead, Julie.
From what I've heard from the mediums that, and even in basic mainstream psychology, there are definitely these connections with ancestral energy or memories or that sort of thing, that even if you didn't know your grandfather, then you're still connected. He's still your grandfather. And the other piece that I wanted to say was, the mediums often say, if you think it's a sign, it's a sign. Like, don't disparage the sign because it wasn't as powerful, or, you know, it's not as clear, it's not cut and dry. Like, one of the mediums in From the Mouths of Mediums said, people are looking for fireworks or they should be looking for fireflies. And so if you experience that as a sign or as a, you know, a connection, then it is. No one can take that away from you. But even, again, in mainstream psychology too, the body remembers dates. Like, sometimes people will just think, oh, I feel really awful today. Like, what's going on? And they'll look at the date and they'll go, oh, I didn't realize it was coming. It's the anniversary of, you know, this death or whatever. That the body and the brain have memories.
They kick in. Julie, you promised to keep us on top of your research and let us know when these studies are done. We'd love to have you back.
Yeah, I would love to come back. And maybe I can bring one of the mediums, because, like I said,
sure,
readings on the phone. And I would recommend people visit Wimbridge.org and join our email list, because we're not very spammy. We email people, you know, once a month, once a quarter.
And where do they pick up your books? Through Kindle and places like that?
Through Amazon. You can get all the books at Amazon. And if people visit books.wimbridge.org, they're all listed there with the links. And all sales support research, I offer them as ebooks, because I wanted this information support, and I wanted to keep it cheap. All my books are under $5.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. Julie, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. You enjoy the rest of... get some sleep. Get some sleep. And we'll pick up whenever you you come back again with some new research studies. Don't forget our very special memorial show tomorrow to several Coast to Coast guests who have passed away recently. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.